and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. Welcome, one and all, to the great big tent that is Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark. Mark Riley, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning to you, Mark Maron.
Apparently someone took over the show yesterday. Did you know those guys were going to do that? I had no idea they were going to do that.
So I heard hints.
Brendan, P.W. McDonald, Dan Pashman, Son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, New Jersey, Kalo, the Costco Ho on the board.
Apparently, they ran things.
Yeah, apparently. Apparently. Yeah, and I heard it went pretty well, according to some emails that Pashman solicited.
Oh,
going over the emails, it's like, I think Dan and Brendan and Kalo should definitely have a weekend show, like people trying to improvise. It was hilarious.
What was that, lpash@aol.com?
Yeah, right, there's several different versions of Pashman Family. I even sent one in. I thought I was pressured. I didn't even listen to the show. I wrote one into Air America Radio. Those guys did a great job.
They sounded good, man. They did all right.
How could they not sound good? They're the guys. They're the heartbeat of Morning Sedition, my friend. Kale, you all right? You have a good weekend? How was the holiday weekend, okay?
I had a great weekend, my friend.
I asked you, and then I'm about to say what I did. I'm like, hey, how was your weekend? By the way, did I tell you what I did? What did I do?
Yes.
I did a lot of things, man. I got a lot of things done. One of the things I did was the guys from Merino Fish, you know, the fish place across the street from me. I hadn't gone by there in like 4 days, right?
Point number one.
I haven't stopped by there, right? I haven't stopped by there in like a week. He's out in the street going, hey! Hey, what? You just walking by now? And he threw me a monkfish and told me how to cook it, so I did that.
Oh, Lord.
Excellent. He just threw you it? It wasn't wrapped up or anything?
Well, haven't you ever been to Seattle? They just throw fish through the air. No. I went in, he cut it up, he told me how to cook it. It was excellent. I caught up on some movies after having that guy from Time Magazine in last week with the 100 greatest movies of all time. I hadn't seen 50 of them, so I've gotten started, Riley.
You got started? I heard you saw Date for Night, which is one of my favorite movies.
Is it really one of your favorites?
Yeah. I enjoy Date for Night. I was a big Truffaut fan. I'm also a big Werner Herzog fan, although he's nuts.
Yeah, no, his films are great. One of them is on there, Aguirre. Wrath of God. Is it Aguirre? I've seen it twice, but I don't know how to
There's a Werner Herzog documentary where he pronounces it two different ways.
Is that Burden of Dreams? Is that that documentary? Burden of Dreams is the making of that movie, isn't it?
No, this is the one that details his relationship with
Klaus Kinski. That's a different one. Right. That's a great movie. But I watched Day for Night, which is a great film. I watched In a Lonely Place with Humphrey Bogart, the Nick Ray film, that I'd never seen before. He plays a screenwriter. Awesome.
Nick Ray was a world-class director, too.
No, he's great. He's great. On Dangerous Ground is a great film. Yeah. That's the one with Ida Lupino plays the blonde woman, and Robert Ryan plays the cop who's out in the country. He was in a Wim Wenders film, American Friend. Did you ever see that?
Oh, no.
Nick Ray plays the painter that's supposed to be dead with the eye patch. He's on his way out.
Uh-huh.
These aren't important issues, but I'll tell you what else I did.
What'd you do?
Yesterday, I read Chris Hedges' new book, Losing Moses on the Highway. He's going to be in this week. What a great
book.
What a personal examination of the Ten Commandments in a secular sense, removed from religion and just applied to why the Ten Commandments are important. And he does it through 10 chapters and an epilogue in terms of just personal stories, sort of illustrating each commandment. And he's a very intense writer, and he really goes right to the heart of why things are, on a human level, very disparaging, why there's despair, why there's hopelessness, what are false idols. It's heavy stuff, but you know what? It's that stuff that resonates in your heart, because you know it's true, and you know on some level that you're just kidding yourself.
Well, he seemed to, when he was here before, he seemed to have resonated with a lot of our listeners, as a matter of fact.
Well, he was talking about the evangelical right. He had gone to the Christian Broadcasting Convention and had some things to say about that. He was brought up in the church. He went to
Harvard Divinity School.
And he didn't turn his back completely on it, because he's obviously a theological thinker, but he became a war journalist instead. He's a deep dude, and this book is phenomenal. I liked War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning, his last book, a little better in its focus. But this thing was ambitious and very good. I'm looking forward to talking to him. I also went to Egypt on Sunday. Went to Egypt.
Is that back in time for today's show?
Egypt is right down the street from me in Astoria. I decided I was in the wake of some very specific American hatred. This is bizarre, Riley. I heard about this new Egyptian restaurant. You go down on Steinway Street, which is right around the corner from my house.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And there are those coffee shops where the guys are smoking hookahs and watching Al Jazeera and reading Islamic newspapers. And there was a new seafood restaurant. I went to that. It was excellent. This place, Sabri's. It doesn't matter what the name of the seafood restaurant. And then I'm walking down the street. I'm a fish guy. I'm walking down the street, and in front of me is this dude in running shorts, all right, with no shirt on. He's got his headphones on. He's listening to music, I'm guessing. And he's just walking down the street, and all the signs on Steinway by the Grand Central, they're all in Arabic. A lot of them are in Arabic. There's Koran stores. There's those smoke shops. There's coffee. It's an Egyptian neighborhood. And this guy's just walking down the street, talking out loud to nobody in particular. Oh, yeah, look at this. I'm sure there's a sweeper cell somewhere around here. He's yelling it into the coffee shop.
Only in New York do you see stuff like this happen.
And he's just walking down the street going, what's good in my country? I know there's a sleeper cell. Some guys are going to get out and go, yes, we are a sleeper cell. But it's just the hatred of it all. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he goes, two nights a day. I don't need this. As if someone was doing it to him. All right? And he's looking at these Arabic signs just going, oh, God. I can't believe it. And then I went across the street, and I went to a Middle Eastern pastry shop.
Okay.
And I sat there and had an espresso and four cookies. And I'm thinking if that guy had just gone with me and got all sugared up, it would have went away. He would understand that, it's a little bit for everybody. I'll tell you something, though. You're in those coffee shops sometimes. And I wish I was, maybe it's not that I'm a small person, but I'm looking at somebody, I'm seeing he's reading a newspaper, it's in Arabic,
mm-hmm.
and there's a big picture of Zarqawi on it, and there's a moment where I'm looking at it going, what's that say? Is that pro?
Does that say our leader?
Exactly. Obviously, there's a 99% chance that it doesn't, but the one thing you don't hear in this country much is, by me, I'm a Jew, but I'm not obviously a religious Jew, but I know that they're, the full spectrum of Judaism, Orthodox Jews, conservative Jews, Jews that don't practice, da, 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 da. But you don't hear any of that dialogue in terms of the Muslims in this country, the moderate Muslims. It's just not, when you walk through a neighborhood like that, I have no differentiation in my head, aside from some guys obviously dress in a more Orthodox fashion. They wear the full-on, I don't even know what they call them. I feel ignorant. But there's obviously guys that are just Muslim and working people. But I don't know anything about that stuff, and I need to know more.
Well, see, what's interesting about the Muslim world and its representation, certainly in this country, is that you have people from different countries that practice different types of Islam. There's Shia, there's Sunni, there's the Wahhabists, there are all of these, and they all coexist in a relatively small space here, space here in New York, whether it's Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn or Astoria, as you mentioned. And, the guy that this martial arts guy that they arrested for being an Al-Qaeda sympathizer or a guy who wanted to be a trainee with Al-Qaeda, wanted to teach him martial arts or something.
Well, there were two guys that were arrested.
Yeah, one in Florida.
One in Florida and one here in New York.
Yeah.
And I believe the one in Florida was a doctor.
Yes.
Like a middle-class doctor, lived in a gated community, had a few kids, had a medical license. And the guy who was arrested here was a martial arts teacher.
Yeah.
And I guess the deal was that they had been phone-tapped, and there had been many conversations that they had had about going to Afghanistan, about training terrorists or wanting to be trained. And there was even some speculation that there was a plan to bring in arms to aid terrorism.
And they're going to be making their appearances, at least they're scheduled to make their appearances later this morning at federal courthouses, one in Miami and here in New York City. We don't know who their lawyers are. Their names are Rafiq Abduz Sabir and Tariq Shah. Tariq Shah's mother lives up in Albany and says that this charge is absurd and ridiculous.
But see, that's the fascinating thing about where I live and just walking down the street is that, certainly maybe there are people that sympathize with the jihadis. Maybe there are, potential dangerous people. I don't know. But what I do know is that when you deal with Catholics, when you deal with any of the other major religious groups in this country, just from growing up in America, I know people that are Catholic, and there's a full range of Catholicism. There's fallen Catholics, there are religious Catholics, there are people that are just Catholic by name. But the one thing that isn't fully integrated into my, sensibility is the range of Muslims.
Well, see, a lot of that also has to do with language, because many, many people who practice Islam in this country don't practice it in English. For example, if you go to a Greek Orthodox church or an Armenian Orthodox church, of which there are many, there's a Croatian Orthodox church not far from here.
Mm-hmm.
And what you find is that the language is what makes things different. You know, they don't do their services in English, and as a result, they kind of fly underneath the radar.
Yeah.
Whereas Roman Catholics generally, since they stopped doing Latin, most of them do their services in English or in Spanish, depending on the congregation.
But see, my assumption is that not unlike Jews or Catholics or Protestants or any other religious background, mm-hmm. that there are plenty of Muslims who are going, yeah, I'm Muslim, but I don't really practice it.
There may be a few.
Come on, this guy. I mean, how can they be that different from other lapsed religious people? They
There are quite a number if you start looking at where Muslims work.
I'm going to ask around.
Places. Ask around.
I'm going to take the tape recorder out and just ask around. Well, I did more in the weekend, Chris, and I'll tell you about it later. But I want to talk about this. Apparently, the Catholics, speaking of religion, Catholic theologians are encouraging married couples to adopt unwanted embryos from fertility clinics. Others, apparently, are against the idea, and we'll tell you why as the conversation continues. Good morning. It's Air America Radio.
Join the morning tradition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning tradition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
This morning's edition on Air America Radio. If you want to come see us in person, we'll be broadcasting live this Friday from City Bakery in New York City.
Yeah.
On 18th Street between 5th and 6th Avenues from 6 to 9 a.m. We'll be giving away free stuff. Mike Doty's going to be there. Hopefully, if we can get him to be there for 2 hours, it'd be great. Wouldn't it be great if he just played us in and out of breaks and played a few songs and hung out, jammed a little bit? Hi, huh, Chris? Chris is in love with Mike Doty.
I'm so jealous. He's like my favorite artist.
Which is weird because Chris usually...
I used to love the fat guy.
But
he's not that fat. Is it?
No, he isn't, but it's okay. You can change up. You know, there's no reason you can't be attracted to any number of different people. New York Post gossip columnist Paula Froelich. Is that even her name? She's going to be there.
Oh,
and she's
okay.
going to dish some dirt on whoever, you know. We're reaching out, man.
Well, what kind of dirt are we...
Who knows? We'll ask
we're not talking about the issues?
Yeah, we're going to talk about the issues, but we'll talk about some New York dirt.
Dirt issues.
Come by, have some coffee. We've got some Mike Doty CDs. There'll be pastries. They're, you know, trying to work at it. I think we might have... Maybe we'll have mugs by then. Who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe a keychain or two will get you a keychain. So, in terms of the Vatican... This is weird considering the amount of debate that's going on just here in this country about stem cells, but the Vatican apparently, Mark, has not taken a stand. Apparently there's two schools of thought within the Catholic Church, whereas all embryos should be used properly, and then there's other people that are like, well, they shouldn't be used if you're going to fertilize them improperly.
Well, yeah, this is a very weird situation that the Catholic Church finds itself, because on the one hand, there are some Catholics who side with the evangelicals, who essentially say, you know, if these...
all stem cells should be babies.
So all stem cells already are babies.
Well, let's not push it.
Well,
okay.
Sorry. All embryos are babies waiting to be fertilized. And, of course, that's that whole snowflake movement that visited the president the other week.
That's what I'm talking about, embryos. Right. So these Catholics align themselves with the... with the evangelicals in the way that they think that no matter whether the embryos was fertilized outside of the womb or in the womb or whether it's just hanging out, it should become a human being.
Yeah, and Pope Benedict the 16th may well rule against embryo adoption.
Uh-huh.
In other words, the official Vatican policy, which of course is the policy that the Catholics are supposed to follow, may be at odds with what the evangelical Christians are promoting.
Because he's old school. He says, you know, there shouldn't be any babies being had if it doesn't happen from the old school way, which is, you know, when you have sex.
Now, I don't know if this means, Mark, that the Vatican is signing on to the notion of, you know, stem cell research. I'm not sure they're going that far. But they are saying that this whole idea of taking embryos, you know, shipping them from one place to another, which, by the way, brings up an interesting paradox for people who are looking to adopt, because if they do believe that embryos are lives, how can you send them FedEx?
Yeah.
I mean, does that make sense? Does it make sense to send a human life via a parcel post shipper?
Yeah,
because that's how they're doing it.
Well, why not? I mean, you know, I mean, they obviously they're not, they don't need air and water. You know, they're just suspended in a cryogenic tank, Riley. It's
but
not like
they're alive.
Let me out.
They're
let
alive.
Me out. You don't hear the little sense of like. I don't want to go
I don't
in the
know.
Box.
But if they're life, you have to treat them like life, don't you?
Well, this woman that you're talking about who had some four embryos sent to her in a cryogenic container via
yeah.
FedEx, who, you know, they got lost, so she went down to FedEx and demanded that she said, quote,
my baby.
You have my babies there. I need you to hand them over. Yeah, I know that moment at the FedEx place. It's like, hey, there's some crazy lady out here that wants a box. She says has babies
in them. Yeah, and I mean, it is really around the question of life, and this issue is now it's apparently in the Senate.
Yeah. Well, my question here for you, Riley, is that this woman who we're talking about that I just brought up without a name, this Danielle Brinkman, in Phoenix, she had those embryos, you know, four of them over a period of time, you know, put into her to make babies with, and three of them were miscarriages, and one of them survived. Now, my question is, if you're going to discuss this in any real way, what about those three miscarriages? How do you rationalize that? You know, is that, you know, who is it caused that loss of life?
Well, you know, that brings up a very, again, another interesting paradox for the people that describe themselves as pro-life, for the people that are this absolute about what constitutes life.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you say that this embryo is a living thing and then you miscarry, are you guilty of harming the embryo and therefore snuffing out a life?
Yeah, it's tough questions. But what I want to know is, and I don't know if this is a embryo that's fertilized already. Now, when you take that to term as a woman, does it have any of your genetic material if you get it already fertilized? Do you know what I mean? If the embryo has been fertilized outside of the womb and then placed inside a womb, then the person whose womb it is there's no genetic material of that individual, is there?
Well, there could be if it's her embryo.
Right, but if it isn't?
If it isn't, then technically, I guess not.
Wow. That's
I guess.
Bizarre. So let's talk about when we continue this conversation. Senator Brownback and Arlen Specter, Senator Arlen Specter.
Interesting little exchange.
Well, Brownback is a born again Catholic. Apparently, he was one of Santorum's converts, and Specter is dying of cancer.
Yeah.
And they had an exchange, you know, about stem cell research that was pretty, you know, provocative, pretty loaded. And we'll get into that in a few minutes here on Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It is Tuesday morning. It's not Monday. It's Tuesday. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program is what you're listening to. Did I say that twice already? Wow. 3 days, man. 3 days was great. So the Vatican can't decide what to do about stem cells and where they stand on embryos, and, you know, fertilized in vitro and then placed into the womb. They got a problem with it. The Pope's kind of old school. Outside of being a Nazi when he was a kid, he's also old school in terms of Catholicism. And he says, look, if it doesn't happen in the organic, regular way, the fertilization, that is, in the small amount of time that we allot you to do that, which is the only reason you should be doing that, that it might not be legitimate, but they haven't passed a ruling or whatever it's called in the Catholic Church, forgive my ignorance, as to where they stand on that. But I'll tell you, right here in the Senate, the battle wages on. Between Senator Brownback and Senator Specter. Brownback, of course, a religious fanatic. Specter, of course, an old man who has cancer. And, you know, one of the arguments that we were talking about here on the break with PW is that, you know, there are hundreds of thousands of these embryos around.
400,000 of them.
A lot of them, apparently about 88% of them, are, you know, spoken for, by the people that donated them. And then about 3% are put aside for medical research, I guess privately funded medical research that would be at this point in time. And about 2%, or about 9,000 embryos, are actually available for donation to other couples. Now, what the real question is that are they going to find receptors for all of these embryos? No. Are they just going to sit in the freezer? Yes. Are some of them going to go bad while they're sitting in the freezer or just thrown away? Yes. Are some of them going to be, you know, who the hell knows what's going to happen to them? But to deny the medical research that is that should be done with these embryos, embryonic stem cells, is ridiculous, and it really comes to head with Senator Spector and Senator Brownback, two Republicans, by the way. But Spector is a strong proponent of stem cell research because he has cancer. Can we hear this clip?
We shouldn't be researching on that life at any time during its continuum unless we have your consent.
Senator Spector,
when did your life start?
Sam, I'm a lot more concerned about this point about when my life is going to end.
Yeah, that was just a tip of the iceberg with what was going on
there. Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, this is a difficult thing for Senator Brownback to defend. Here's someone who believes in his heart that he could benefit from some form of stem cell research. You know, when you have a living, breathing human being who says, I'm dying and maybe this could help me, how do you argue with that?
Right.
It's difficult.
Well, it seems to me that it's a ridiculous point that, you know, what the evangelical right sort of does with this particular issue and with the abortion issue in general is they give their followers something to focus on. It's the culture of life idea is completely, obliterated by the fact that, you know, a lot of these people are pro-death penalty. They don't seem to have any statements against the war. That the idea that they are a culture of life doesn't hold up philosophically. And hanging on to these embryos as potential people, it's just, you know, fine. You can hold on to that, but make room for saving people's lives who might be dying of diseases. You might have spinal cord injuries. You might have a leukemia or sickle cell anemia. It's just ridiculous.
Well, I mean, it would seem to me at some point the evangelicals could say to their flocks, look, if you want to create these embryos, if you want us to remove them, and if you want, if we want to set up this adoption situation. Now, mind you, there are 9,000 embryos, by latest count, that can be used for these kinds of adoptions. Since 1998, when the Snowflake organization started, they have couples who have received them have had something on the order of 81 children.
And also, it doesn't even discuss in this piece, or I haven't heard the discussion at all, which is how many of these in vitro processes they don't take.
Yeah, I know.
You know, I mean, I know people personally who have tried, you know, 5 or 6 in vitro fertilizations that didn't take.
Well, you know, that I think may be the crux of the argument of some Catholics, that, you know, the idea that in vitro fertilization, and by the way, they are opposed in many instances to any form of that kind of fertilization that takes place outside the bonds of matrimony and you know, traditional sex, but it seems as though they are very, very much worried about what happens, how many of these embryos will be sacrificed at a certain point for one couple to have one child. That seems to be an open question.
Yeah. I don't know, you know, what they're thinking in terms of medical research, because it seems to me that medical research should be able to move forward and use embryonic stem cells, and they should also be able to adopt them if they want to adopt them. Yeah, I just had this weird thought about, what if you have a Catholic couple that just don't want to have sex at all because it's too dirty, but would rather just have
fertilize outside.
I don't want to touch her, but I'd like to have a kid.
Wow. Let's maintain the purity of our relationship.
Exactly. So let's move on. Let's talk about this. The CIA, there's this piece out now that about these renditioning flights, these airlines, but apparently the CIA has an entire fleet of airplanes that they use for any number of things that I had no idea about. Did you, Riley?
No, I had no idea that it was as extensive as it is and that they have used so many shell corporations. And, Mark, you know, you read this story. There's a story in today's New York Times about the CIA expanding terror battle under guise of charter flights. And the thing that's scary is the CIA uses all these, you know, phony names and fictitious post office boxes and all of this subterfuge. What is to stop terrorists from using the precise template that this agency does if they can get away with it?
Oh, that's an interesting point, where they can just charter airplanes
Yeah.
They definitely, they're no longer going to be able to take flying lessons, That's for sure. But what would stop them from chartering planes?
They take flying lessons someplace else. They come here. They set up the same kind of foolishness that the CIA is setting up. And see, the interesting thing is there are now countries, specifically Italy and Sweden, that are launching investigations as to precisely what the CIA was doing with these little charter business jet airlines that were coming through their country. Some of these renditionings, by the way, took place through third neutral countries. And people are in those countries are starting to say, wait a minute, what exactly was it you were doing with, because they were told something completely different.
Well, apparently, like, if I'm understanding this properly, the CIA has several different proprietary businesses.
Shell fronts.
They're not real businesses without real people on them, but they are charter airline businesses. Now, these apparently they have a fleet of airplanes that includes a World War II era DC-3, Gulfstream 5 executive jet, a Hercules transport plane, several of them, and they have Boeing business jets, 737, and these flights have been used to not only rendition or move terrorist suspects around, but to fly dignitaries
missions.
Around.
Missions. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're talking about 26 planes that they own outright.
Mm-hmm.
10 of those planes were purchased since 2001. Now, what they've done, again, I guess the CIA is just torn a page from either Corporate America's book or Organized Crime's book, or maybe both books. They've just set up this little web of corporations that have no employees and no function other than just owning the airlines.
Right. But they're made up people.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, in some cases, they are actually real people. They go out and solicit folks to be on the boards of these different little shell corporations so that if anybody asks, they can trace it back to a real guy who used to be in the Air Force, who used to be a pilot or something like that. And then all the questions are supposed to stop. If this New York Times article is to be believed, and if what they're saying is in any way true, then the CIA is going to have to find another way to do this because the sheets have been pulled off of them.
Well, this is right. What is the now? Our name, Air America, was actually used by a.
That was a CIA operation that happened during the Vietnam War. It was shut down in 1976.
This is supposed to be a continuation of that.
Yeah.
This is a different model for utilizing CIA planes.
Absolutely. And some of the people that are in charge of some of these shell corporations, the real people, are ex-Air America, not our Air America, the CIA's Air America, operatives. These are guys who used to run flights for Air America.
Now, is this illegal? I mean, how should we be looking at this?
I don't think it's technically illegal. What should scare people about this?
Shell organizations or shell businesses aren't illegal?
Not if the government runs them, probably. I don't know. I mean, I could be wrong.
It seems to me that when you have a proprietary business that is fictional, mm-hmm. that is by name only, and a few post office boxes and with no real people attached, and some made-up people or people that don't even know what they're lending their name to, that there would be something questionable about that.
Well, there is something certainly questionable about it. But what the setup this way has allowed them to bypass, A, any identification with the American government, which goes into the whole mission impossible if you or any of the other people
So they can fly undetected as non-military personnel.
As non-military. They are civilian aircraft with no tangible connection to the U.S. government.
And apparently they can just change the number on the tail fin anytime they want.
Yeah, and by the way, they can land at any military base, U.S. military base, on planet Earth.
Uh-huh.
You know, these little small planes, these are not, these are not jumbo jets. They're not flying 777s full of people. They're flying small jets and there's a description in one instance of people finding that there's a number, because all these planes have to have numbers on them, right?
Right.
They have one number one day, the next day they come out of the hangar with a different number.
Exactly. So what I want to know is, outside of us finding this information out from the New York Times, this is a question that I have a lot, Riley. I mean, it's important to know the truth. It's important to know this stuff is going on. It's important to get it out there.
Yeah.
But, on some level, does it make a difference to the people in power? I mean, you got people like, you got Dick Cheney on Larry King last night just lying. I mean, he's lied before, and he lies to the American people, and there are people that are programmed to believe him that will never, ever, wake up to the truth in any real way because they want to believe what he is saying, and they believe in a type of America that is not a democratic.
Well, see, what a lot of people will say is that this kind of subterfuge is fine as long as it's done in the interest of the country. That's what the whole Memorial Day celebration was about yesterday.
Right. But is that? But does that type of stuff? How far does that ideology go? I mean,
as far as it needs to. That's the scary part.
But who judges that? I mean, obviously, you and I are not. I'm not cool with people being tortured for months on
for not doing
no evidence against them. I'm not cool with that. But apparently, some people are willing to dismiss that. What the hell's wrong with those people?
It's not them. That's what's wrong with them. Until they or someone they know gets, you know, spirited off a bus someplace and flown to Egypt, then they'll have a problem with it.
Well, when we come back, you know, in just a second coming up, we're going to go into what Cheney said on Larry King a little bit. And we're going to, you know, play the facts against, you know, the lies that he, you know, put out there yesterday.
Slacker.
46 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Call us at 866.
Ha! That's awesome. Go on.
303.
Wow, yes. Yes, I love it.
2270.
Oh, yeah, drop the bomb. Drop it. There's not a dry eye in the house. Keep going.
That's 866-303-2270.
Okay, well, just so you know, it was good, but I was also being pretty generous.
This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Fifty-one past, actually. Mark Mariner with Mark Riley.
My peeps!
Air America Radio. Morning Sedition. The facts, the fury, the funny. Morning Sedition. Don't be stupid. It's Mark and Mark. Hey, look at that. Really? That noise? I remember this bit.
Uh-oh.
It's not. Look at that. The Streisand compound is sending us a liberal agenda for the weekly liberal agenda that we get every Monday now. Write these down. Here are your marching orders. One, a socialist is leading the Senate race in Vermont. Vacillate between supporting him and saying he can't win. End up being no help whatsoever to him or anyone else.
Ooh.
Two, send your kids to a liberal summer camp. Crafts, swimming, passive resistance. Three, lay a hemp wreath at the tomb of the unknown soldier.
Ooh.
Four, go around the bookstores putting stickers on copies of the Quran saying, the Bush administration says, please dispose of this book properly. Five, distribute large amounts of heroin labeled product of Afghanistan, courtesy of U.S. foreign policy. And today's phrase, just drop it into conversation, Bush visiting Arlington Cemetery is like O.J. going back to Brentwood.
Ooh.
Wake up, sheeple, and hear the war dead spinning in their graves.
Ooh.
That's pretty heavy. Pretty heavy stuff there.
The compound is deep.
Yeah. Come see us in person. We'll be broadcasting live this Friday from City Bakery in New York City on 18th Street between 5th and 6th Avenues from 6 to 9 a.m., folks. Maybe we'll have a keychain or something. Mike Doty's going to be there.
Yeah.
He's going to be singing songs, have some coffee, some croissants. I'm laying back on the butter, man. I'm in a fight against butter, my friend. The war against butter continues.
You can't stop the butter.
What did I say?
I can't stop it.
I don't need it, man.
You got to have it.
I turned it all around this weekend, right?
Cows all over America. You got to have it.
My chest cleared up, and I went running. I went to the park. I rode the bike finally down to Astoria Park, ran a few miles around the track, got back on the bike, rode home, rode to this the theater to buy tickets. I'm riding all over Astoria.
And wait a minute. Now, did you use margarine?
I don't eat toast. I don't need it.
No toast?
Spray some canola spray, like a Pam type of spray in the
on your toast?
Pan. I don't need the toast.
Okay.
Sometimes I put a little butter on the tortilla or something, but most things have enough butter in them. What did I say we were going to talk about? Cheney. Oh, yeah.
Cheney.
Last night, Cheney on Meet the... What is it?
Larry King Live.
Well, if this is the same guy that said, my belief is we will, in fact, be greeted as liberators. When we went into Iraq, he also said, I think they're in the last, this is what he said last night. I think the insurgency is in the last throes, okay? I think they're in their last throes, if you will, of the insurgency. 31 people were killed over the weekend, 31 Iraqi police, right?
There's just been a wave of death in Iraq.
American soldiers.
Yes.
Killed.
Since the end of April, we're talking about.
It's baffling. I mean, you know, insurgents have killed more than 700 Iraqis and 70 U.S. troops since a Shiite-led cabinet was announced on April 28th, making this May the bloodiest month since the pre-election insurgency in January. Just yesterday, as I said, on the day of Cheney's comments to Larry King, 31 Iraqis were killed in coordinated attacks in Baghdad, and 4 American soldiers and an Iraqi soldier were killed in a plane crash. And this is our vice president, the same guy who said that, you know, that kept insisting that not only were there weapons of mass destruction, but that Saddam Hussein was aligned with terrorists. Well, now, from all indications, from everyone we've talked to who has been there, saying that the insurgency is out of control, they're on the verge of civil war, American troops picked up the Shiite leader.
No,
the
Sunni leader.
The Sunni leader by accident the other day. I mean, it just seems to me that there's insanity there. Now, obviously, I don't want the conflict to go on forever, but I don't want the Vice President of the United States misleading people.
Well, you know, Dick Cheney's forte is misleading people, certainly when you start talking about the prospects for both the insurgency and the presence of U.S. troops in Iraq. Now he says they'll be out by the time Bush is out. I'm not so sure. If you look at this Operation Lightning, which, by the way, has had dubious results, but has had the result of them pushing both, I guess, physically and in the U.S. media, the Iraqi troops up front. The Iraqis announcing, we got 40,000 troops to fight the insurgents. And the insurgents seem to be just laughing at them and blowing up cars whenever they feel like it.
What does this guy have to lose by saying they'll be out by the time Bush is out? What does he care? He's going to be gone. Bush is going to be gone. They both made independent fortunes off of this war, and they continue to do such. I mean, what does he care by saying that? What kind of lip service is that? Are there actually people out there in this country saying, see that? They're going to be out by 2008 or 9, whenever the hell it is?
Well, I mean, they went in 2003. So what Dick Cheney is saying that is that this war will last longer than World Wars One or Two, for that matter, at least America's presence.
But why would he say that? Is he thinking that's encouraging to some people?
Yeah. Actually, he is just, see, he's saying what I think he believes needs to be said to maintain some modicum of support for America's war effort. The sad part of it is that most Americans think we went under false pretenses anyway.
We've got a very important call from Greg in Mississippi on line one. Yes, Greg, what did you need to share with us?
Hey, what's up, Greg?
Hey, since Mark doesn't like butter, I'm the same way. I don't use butter. Mm-hmm. I use this thing called fat-free parquet butter spray.
Okay.
That doesn't taste any difference.
Well, thank you very much, Craig. Thank you.
Wait, really?
Yeah, back to the insurgency. Anyway, what I'm saying...
Well, you're right, though, I guess. I've never tried fat-free anything. I mean, who cares?
No. See, he is right. The butter spray, you can. I can't. I just wanted to throw that transition just to show the range.
That's right.
Of our listeners.
And we can do anything.
What's important to people? You know, there are people festering in basements right now saying, "Good, take down Cheney." But Greg, on the other hand, is like, "Well, I'd prefer parquet." The butter. Mm-hmm. See, you know, people are just people. On some level, it comes down to your day to day life. I appreciate that. I'll try it. I've tried taste like the one that says just tastes like just butter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
None of them really do.
But, you know, insurgency and toast, no good.
Insurgency and toast?
No, insurgency.
How about Guantanamo and toast?
No, that's no good either.
Cheney says Guantanamo, you know, Amnesty's crazy about Guantanamo. But,
yeah,
hey.
They just want to keep it. Cheney's, we all know he's the Antichrist, but this whole idea that anyone would take anything that he says as truth, well, they do.
Yeah, I know.
This is a guy that's eating his own heart out, literally. All right, we're going to come back. We're not going anywhere, but we'll continue this conversation in a few minutes here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome back from the long weekend. Apparently, some people were here churning away, doing our show while we were away. Pashman and P.W. McDonald in the studio yesterday.
Doing the work.
Hanging out, making people feel like, you know, the people that had to work and people, our regular listeners that didn't want to feel stranded by a best of show, got the fellas.
There you go.
Sometimes when you read the headlines, if you can, it can be sort of tough to figure out what they're saying. So luckily we got this great machine, this iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator to help us with some headlines. So let's feed it a few. What do you say? Soon to be available on a ringtone. From the New York Times, Bush pays tribute to generations of fighters killed in wars. Okay. Bush pays tribute to generations of fighters killed in war. Translation, Bush remembers millions of brain cells he lost in college. Okay. From Fox News, Lynn Cheney says GOP should run Laura Bush for president. Lynn Cheney says GOP should run Laura Bush for president. Translation, anybody but Bill Frist movement gains momentum. From Fox News, ex-prostitutes still can't teach in Oregon. Ex-prostitutes still can't teach in Oregon. Translation, ass dismissed. Now, I'm sure it's going to hurt some ex-prostitutes or current prostitutes' feelings because they, you know, they're
sex workers to you, pal.
All right. Well, let's briefly, I just want to say a couple of the stories that we're kicking around today is the Vatican is unclear on where to stand on embryonic. What is it? It's in embryos. It's things that are they're fertilized outside the womb, in vitro. The Vatican is not clear as to whether or not they should disallow any sort of in vitro fertilization if
yes.
It doesn't happen organically, old school.
Yes.
Once a month or once a year, however many times that the Vatican allows you to have it. Also, Cheney apparently said last night on Larry King Live. That he believes, quote,
all is well.
I think they're in the last throes, if you will, of the insurgency, despite the fact that it's been the most violent month since before January.
Yeah, and they also he also reacted to the Amnesty International report on Guantanamo by saying, it's a load of crap.
Yes. Also, if you want to come see us in person, we'll be broadcasting live this Friday from City Bakery in New York City right here on 18th Street between 5th and 6th Avenues from 6 to 9. Mike Doty will be there from Soul Coughing, his old band. He's got several solo albums out. He's got a new one that just came out. We're giving some of those away.
Yeah.
We're
going
to have coffee for everybody, maybe some keychains, a coffee mug, or what have you. Now, last week on the show, Riley.
Yes.
We got a call from our buddy, this guy Brian, who lives up in Washington. He's been listening to the show for since the beginning, practically. He leaves messages frequently. He calls the show frequently. And we brought him up in conversation on the show last week. Chris, this is a guy named Brian up there in Everett, Washington, who's a frequent caller to the show, but sometimes a little over the top. You know, he spends a lot of time awake. We're assuming that he has an inconsistent mental disposition, but a good guy. And I'm being diplomatic, man.
Okay.
See, that was last week.
Okay, yeah.
I said that Brian's got an inconsistent mental disposition. Now, we get a series of messages, right? Now, you have to understand, our answering machine here at work, for some reason, it does cut people off fairly quickly and inconsistently.
Yeah.
But we got a series of messages. Let's hear the first one first, Chris.
I got an inconsistent mental disposition.
You got a song.
How's that gonna look in the deposition? I got all messed up by a crooked family physician. Clear my name.
Okay.
So that's one. All right. But like that wasn't enough. He really, really wanted to get this song out there.
Yeah.
That he ripped off of my description of him. And here's a series of phone messages of Brian in Washington trying to get his song across.
Now I may have some strange religious views. I believe Al Franken is the king of the Jews. Jesus may have... Hey, this phone system is screwing me up by hanging me up before I get a chance to punch it in. Listen to my song. Now I may have some strange religious views. Because I believe Al Franken is the king of the Jews. Al Franken, nothing to lose, makes you laugh as a troubling. You know, whoever f***ing with this phone system can f*** themselves in the mouth and eat their own waste, you know, that's what I say. So leave me alone. I'm trying to get a good take and replay it back on my touchtone pad. So can I play and get a good recording so I can hear how it sounds? I got an inconsistent I'm trying to form a song here.
Oh, no.
And I can't have the
phone people or whoever's in charge of punching my buttons, you know, needs to get, you know, needs to get some cancer, you know, needs to find their own disease in their own mind, you know, and how happy they really are with their life and how content they are and how they're going to look to the sky when they die, you know, or are they going to be in hell? I got an mental disposition.
Oh, man.
Now, how's that? Gonna live in a deposition.
Is that
all of them? That's it.
Brian, if you're up, what time is it there? It's like 4?
He's up, trust me.
Call us up and you can play the whole song if you've got the whole song. Oh, my God. This guy, he finally got through. You know, unbelievable. You know, Michael McKean from Spinal Tap is going to be in studio in just a little while.
Yes.
Which is good. He's going to be singing some songs
with his wife,
Annette O'Toole. Brian, maybe we'll call back. That machine is so funny. We rarely
I've got an inconsistent mental disposition.
It's catchy, isn't it?
I want it for a ringtone.
You do?
Yeah.
Speaking of ringtones.
Yeah, I know.
Speaking of ringtones, my friend, did you know that, like, the number one song in England?
Yes, I know.
The number one song in England is a ringtone, the Crazy Frog Axel F.
Yes. I heard it. I hunted it down.
But it beat out Coldplay.
Yes.
As the most. Now, how do they determine that, Riley? Now,
they survey about 5,600 British retail music shops.
So it's the CD sales. How do you like that, Chris? Aren't you a big Coldplay fan?
Yes, I am.
Looks like your arrogant boys got beat out by a ringtone.
It could be pretty good, you know?
By a ringtone.
So did everybody else on the charts, though.
But Coldplay's like, so there's a pretension to them.
Oh, yeah, I see. Okay.
There's sort of an arrogance to who they think they are. And now they
declare them like the best band in the world.
Who declared them that?
Chris Martin, I believe.
From Coldplay?
Yes, Chris Martin.
He declared himself the best band in the world.
Yes.
Beat out by a ringtone.
Apparently, yeah.
Yeah. Do you have the ringtone?
Yeah.
Can we hear it? I don't know, man.
Oh, yeah, I'm buying this.
It's better than Coldplay, I think. But that's that old song from Beverly Hills Cop, right?
Yeah, Axel F. from Beverly Hills Cop. Harold Faltermeyer, I believe, is the guy that did it. But, yeah. I mean, this is like, you know, this is one of those techno...
Riley with the important information.
That's right. I want to make sure Harold gets all that's coming to him, all right?
I guess he's going to. The name's on it. But, man, I guess... what's his name? Chris Martin? Is that his
name?
Yeah.
He must just be kind of eating his heart out, just grinding his teeth, just sort of like, wow, this is one... Well, you know, Bill Gates had a talk. Wait. Ooh, yeah. Wow.
A ringtone, folks.
All right, thanks, Chris. That's great. It's an awfully long ringtone.
You can't listen to it much longer.
It doesn't beat this.
No.
We got to get that on the ringtone.
Thank God that wasn't released the same week as Coldplay.
But we got to put it to some music.
We can put it to Brian's music.
Those are going to be available on ringtones. How come Brian hasn't called? Maybe he's freaked out.
Maybe he's asleep.
No, he doesn't sleep.
I know he doesn't sleep.
He never sleeps. So when we come back, let's talk a little bit. You know, rock and roll's coming back. We'll take a couple calls if you want. 866-303-2270. Hey, if you can answer that question that I asked before, I must be right. That if you have if you have an egg placed in your womb that's already fertilized,
yes,
and it's got nothing to do with you, it's not your egg and...
And it's, what, not your husband's sperm?
No, yeah, I mean, does that mean that it's not... Of course it's not going to have any genetics. It's a stupid question. What do we want to talk to people about? This is ridiculous.
Hey,
I'm still in vacation head, my friend.
I know, but we'll get out of it.
I went running.
Our listeners will get us out of it.
They're beautiful.
Yes.
Everybody's great. What a great day it is. Can we hear that thing again? Yeah, maybe I'll do something. It's much better than Coldplay. How can that not be better than Coldplay? We'll be right back here on Air America Radio.
Nice. That's Coldplay?
Yes, that's a single.
21 past the hour, Air America Radio. It's Morning Tradition. Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. That's the one that it lost to?
Speed of Sound, yes.
How come all their songs sound the same to me?
I don't know. But
Tell me, am I wrong?
Speed of Sound lost to this.
Wait, play this so you've got the noise of the guy.
What's that? You?
Yeah, playing both at the same time. That'll be really pleasurable for our listeners.
Yeah.
How is that pleasurable to listeners?
All right, let's hear the Coldplay. Not as good a ringtone.
No.
This was like if you heard your phone do this, I'd cry. Like if that came out of my phone, I'd be like, oh my god, I'm gonna kill myself.
Brian's got them both beat, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, let's hear some Brian. Let's hear the first.
Yeah. Let's hear the inconsistent mental disposition.
I guess I guess that would be Brian.
Oh, here's one.
Okay.
Hey, this phone system is screwing me up by hanging me up before I get a chance to punch it in. Listen to my song. Now I may have some strange religious views.
Okay. See, I don't know.
I believe Al Franken is the king of the Jews.
See, that's nice, right? Mary, what's going on, Mary? You're in Italy. You're streaming in Italy.
Hi, Mary.
Good morning.
Hi, Mark and Mark. How you guys doing?
All right.
What a great connection. Are you on an ISDN line?
Yeah, I am.
You are?
Oh, go ahead. Mary.
What's on your mind?
I love Brian. I love that song. I'd like to marry him.
Oh, my God.
He can live with me in Sicily. Inconsistent mental disposition and all. I'm thrilled by him. And I like his little F-bomb comments, too. They were hysterical.
The F-bomb. Yeah, it's... Brian's a character, and I'm sure that he'd be more than willing. I don't know what you're getting into, Mary, but
yeah.
I'm sure
we're
Brian,
not responsible, whatever it is.
I got a feeling Brian might come to Sicily and just, what are you doing in Sicily, just hanging out?
I'm a writer.
Oh. So you're just up in the hills writing?
I live under the volcano here in Etna. So I'm in Catania, which is on the east coast.
Wow.
I'm writing children's books.
You're writing children's books in Sicily? That's nice. And you want Brian to, what, your life is too slow, is it?
My life is not too slow.
you think you want an extremely bipolar lunatic keeping you up at night? Maybe that you'll inspire you to write some children's books that are...
I think that would be a really good muse.
Oh, my goodness.
An excellent muse.
Right, well,
it could be you, Mark Maron, but you're married, and you talk about those crazy cats all the time. So I'm sorry, but I can't handle the one that looks at you weird and climbs on the bed.
do you have cats, Mary? Do you have any?
No, I have no cats. Oh. I'm not a cat person. Oh. No, I have tomatoes.
Oh, tomatoes.
I thought she was going to say she's got a pit bull or something.
Yeah, tomatoes aren't as demanding as cats, necessarily.
No, I'm sorry.
I want to come to Sicily. Yeah. All right. We'll get in touch with Brian. We'll try and make this happen for you, Mary.
Okay.
Not too scary.
We don't have to get in touch. We're sure he's listening.
Yeah. Thanks for your call, Mary.
Thanks, Mary. Wow, from Italy.
From Sicily. God, can you imagine that? All right, well, let's speaking of music, if we can continue to speak about music, why not? We're allowed, aren't we?
Sure.
Apparently, everyone said rock and roll was dead. And I, of course, said, no, it's not. But in terms of record sales, apparently it's starting to blow up again, which is exciting to me. I didn't even get the new Nine Inch Nails. Did you, Chris?
No, I didn't. But
you're not a Nine Inch Nails? Do you do?
Yes, I do.
Are you a Nine Inch Nails fan?
Somewhat. Not so much, but from what I heard about this album, I want to be.
So it's on its way to gold. Dave Matthews Band, which I don't even understand Dave Matthews. Almost half a million copies. I have no idea what the hell Dave Matthews does. Do you, Chris?
Yeah, you know.
Do you like it?
I liked it in college, but
is that what it is? Is it for college people?
Oh yeah, it's people who go to college. It's they love it over there.
But I've looked at them, I've listened to them. It doesn't lock in with me. System of a Down, which my wife loves, they're on their way to gold. Well, apparently, look at this. Here it is. System beat out Toby Keith.
Oh,
like doubled it.
Let's have some applause.
That's exciting. That is exciting to me. And Weezer is doing well. But apparently, they said that, you know, rock was dead, and they thought that it was just over, that, you know, that there was a new music evolving. But these cats that are on the charts now, very straight-out rock and roll, man. Listen to me. Am I turned into an old dud? Straight out rock and roll. Who the hell says rock and roll? Who says that anymore?
But you know what? There is some good news in these charts.
What?
The guy, Constantine from American Idol.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he put out an album, apparently, or has a band called Pray for the Soul of Betty.
Yeah.
And apparently the self-titled CD debuted at number 129, sold about 7,500 copies. There is a God.
Well, who the hell, you know, I mean, who the hell, I don't even understand, number one, who watches that show? All right, number two.
23 million people.
My girlfriend. Your girl, but what?
My daughter.
Isn't there something better to do? Can't you read a book?
Not.
Can't you go
watch
out and take
paint
a walk?
Peel.
Can't you go talk to some people on the street? For God's sake, just go out in the yard or something.
Well, something, yeah. I'm not a big fan of any reality.
I think
television.
It pollutes the talent gene pool myself. It's like, why do these, what do we got to, why should those, why should they be supported?
But you know what? They act as if this
is all new.
They've been doing this since the days of Ted Mack's Amateur Hour in the late 40s. This is what they did.
People like to see regular people try.
No, producers like to save money on regular people because they only got to pay one of them.
How long does it really last? How long has it ever lasted? What's that guy's name? Clay Aiken, the guy that looks like some sort of doll.
Was he from 4 or 5 years ago?
What about the fat guy, Ruben? What's his name?
Ruben Stoddard.
How's he doing? How's his record?
Well,
sound?
He's not outdrawing Luther Vandross. I don't know.
Yeah, that's just it. It's just like it's a sham almost.
Well, it's how some people entertain themselves.
All right, whatever. We're gonna have Michael McKean in here, Nanette O'Toole from you remember him from Spinal Tap.
Spinal Tap.
Mighty Wind. He's gonna do a song from Mighty Wind. The two of them are
fantastic. And we've got a lot more for you next on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Batman, 34 past the hour, Mark Mann here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
This morning's edition on Air America Radio. We are very pleased to have in our studio the husband and wife Oscar-nominated songwriting team, Michael McKean and Nanette O'Toole. They are currently performing through June 4th at Feinstein's at the Regency in New York City. Now, look, I'm a big fan of both of yours, and I've always wanted to ask you a question, Michael, because you co-wrote the music for Spinal Tap. You co-wrote the music for A Mighty Wind, which we're going to hear a song from momentarily. Now, the one thing always stuck in my head before you came here, but for some reason, the song from Spinal Tap, Give Me Some Money, I think that in both movies, you probably had to study like the forms of music that you're parodying and satirizing to really get a handle on the sound. Is that right?
I wouldn't call it study.
Okay.
I would call it avoidance of study. Might be a little closer. No, I've always been kind of a music wonk. I remember the first time I heard Elvis Presley, when I was 7 years old.
Sure.
I mean, it's all just ingrained. And I was always a big fan and a record buyer, and my dad was in the record business, so I got a lot of crap that no one else had. Yeah,
something
really good crap.
That never made the airwaves? Did he just bring home stuff,
yes,
tapes?
Right,
oh, really?
Exactly, yeah. So, while my friends knew all the hits, I knew all the flops, too. And a lot of them were pretty great, you know.
So now, the show that you're doing now at Feinstein's,
yes,
here at the Regency in New York City, it's called No Standards.
Yes.
Now, what is that? What the name is sort of a double entendre?
Well, it's kind of a warning that it's not the average Feinstein show. I mean,
cabaret show.
Yes. New York is the cabaret capital of the world, and Feinstein is probably the epicenter of that world. But we don't do any standards. We do a couple.
Yeah,
it's mainly our own originals. Well, we have a song called I Remember You, which a lot of people have done. A lot of people have covered.
We do a They Might Be Giants song.
Yeah.
We actually open with that, Women and Men.
Women and Men. Do you know that tune?
Yeah.
Oh.
Do you?
I just played along.
Yeah.
I like They Might Be Giants,
yeah,
but I couldn't tell you if I could identify the names of their songs.
Well,
yeah,
they write about everything. That's
yeah,
what so many.
And they write about
are
things
heroes
you've never heard songs about before.
Yes.
We adore them.
Yeah, they're the best.
Mm-hmm.
And we do some Hoagland Carmichael.
And Mr. Carmichael.
But in the songs that you guys that you wrote together and that I imagine, are you doing any from Spinal Tap or no?
Yes.
Yes, as a
yes
matter
really
of fact.
Mm-hmm.
From the
well
gentler side of the canon, as Mother said.
It's a song called Cups and Cakes, which was the B-side of the Thamesmen single, Give Me Some Money, as a matter of fact.
Okay. So were you playing music before you started doing the genius improvisations and whatnot?
It all kind of happened at the same time. 14 was kind of my renaissance period. It was overweight too soon.
I'll tell you, you've ridden that wave for a long time. It's been all right.
That's when I started learning guitar, but that's also when I decided to become an actor, and just because it looked like easy work.
Mm-hmm. So now, how long have you worked with Christopher Guest?
Well, I met Christopher at NYU in 1967. So
wow.
We've been friends for a long time, and we started writing songs together almost immediately. We actually roomed together for a while when my girlfriend bailed on me and went to move to Minnesota and gave the apartment to her father. Yeah, exactly. So I was either room with Dad or find myself another friend. So I moved in with Chris Guest, and it was three of us in this tiny apartment. But we had fun, and we played a lot of songs, and we started writing then.
We're talking to Michael McKean and Ed O'Toole, and the song you're going to do for us today is from Mighty Wind, yeah?
Yeah, we're going to do one from A Mighty Wind. This is actually the first song that Annette ever had a hand in writing.
With Michael.
That's right.
I had done stuff for my kids, you know.
Yeah.
Let's Go Swimming in the Wadi, and You're Cute.
Are those available?
Yeah, it's a special extended play. Yeah.
We have an MP3 for you.
Yeah.
We'll fire it off to you.
It is the first one. This we wrote in the car on the way to between Portland and Seattle.
One, two.
Come on, boys, potatoes in the paddy wagon, gotta get her out of there. Come on, boys, potatoes in the paddy wagon, mama says it just ain't fair. One night, Mama went to fetch us up a sweet potato, fell down the cellar stairs. Stork dropped in while she was on the floor, so my sister was born down there. Daddy said, this one will be nothing but a misery, never will be worth a damn. But Mama just loved her little sweet potato baby with a face like a parboiled yam. Come on, boys, potatoes in the paddy wagon, gotta get her out of there. Come on, boys, potatoes in the paddy wagon, Mama says it just ain't fair. Potato grew up to be as pretty as a peach in her calico and honey yellow curls. Went to the apple cider ball at the armory with all the other ripe and ready girls. Sheriff Dan Pipe picked Potato for the polka, but she spurned him with a fiddle-dee-dee. And before she could turn around and find another partner, Sheriff took her into custody. Come on, boys, potatoes in the paddy wagon, gotta get her out of there. Come on, boys, potatoes in the paddy wagon, Mama says it just ain't fair. Well, Mom and Daddy put together quite a little posse, count me and Jack and Cousin Will. We all hopped into the old Chevy pickup and we caught him at the top of the hill. Daddy took his Remington and shot away the lock for to set his little darling free.
Potato said.
Hey, come on.
Said.
Daddy shut the garage door. The sheriff wants to marry me. Let's go, boys. Potatoes in the paddy wagon. Guess we better leave her there. Let's go, boys, potatoes in the paddy wagon, Mama says it's more than fair. Let's go, boys, potatoes in the paddy wagon, guess we better leave her there. Let's go, boys, potatoes in the paddy wagon, Mama says it's more than fair. Mama says it's more than fair. Mama says it's more than fair.
I kind of blanked there.
You messed it all
no,
up. Your big solo, like I did the other night. Oh, my big mandolin solos.
We are talking to Michael McKean and Annette O'Toole. That was that's a great song. You're a great guitar player, and I must say you're very nice people.
Shocking, isn't it?
That's high praise coming from him.
Sometimes you meet people and you always come across on screen as a very nice guy. I even if you're slightly evil on screen,
I'm largely evil. But I'm a kind of a toothless villain. Whenever I'm the bad guy in a movie, I usually wind up covered in some unpleasant substance.
And because you have one testicle.
Oh.
Not him.
Oh, you're
no.
Honey.
I mean the character.
You really have to tell them everything?
I'm sorry. Oh,
wow.
You got the secrets out.
What are you talking about? Oh, you mean, oh.
Dream On.
On Dream On, I had one testicle.
Yeah, that's why he was so bad. Oh, God.
That was one of those great moments where, like, hey, maybe we should leave them alone for a couple minutes.
No, I actually have played a man with one testicle, and I've played a man with three testicles in Harry Shearer's movie, The Teddy Bear's Picnic. I have a third testicle.
So I suppose that's a much different preparation when you're preparing to do a one testicle character and three testicles.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, it's just, one more night of homework, really.
So, you know what's profound about the type of – I don't even know – do you call what you're doing musical satire with Mighty Wind and with – well, certainly with Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
With Mighty Wind, some of the songs are very appealing and catchy and, you know, they don't seem like joke songs.
Well,
no.
The idea is with any satire, any musical satire, is to get as close as you can to the actual thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just so that you're, you know, kind of on the same page musically as the item that you're satirizing, or else the satire is not going to look right. It's going to look like a joke.
Well, now Christopher Guest has said that he doesn't even like that when they started using the word mockumentary.
Right.
That he doesn't like it to be called a mockumentary because he sees these characters, and as you're saying, I guess the music as well, as being, you know, having their own integrity and being real,
right,
and honoring these characters.
Yeah, I think it's he doesn't like the phrase because he feels it's at odds with the affection that he generally feels for, you know, the topics that he talks about, you know, amateur theatrics and dog shows and old folkies. I mean, look, you know, they're lovely in their own way, you know.
Yeah. And what's the most important thing, not in music, but when you do, I guess this is just a question for me, when you do comedy,
yeah,
the most important element, I'm assuming, is to play it as straight as possible.
Yeah. Yeah, I think John Cleese kind of put his finger on it when he defined farce as what happens on the worst night of your life. And it's true. It's a disaster from the outside, from the inside. And when you think about it, all the really great, funny movies are all about something terrible happening. Or else there's no conflict and there's no rooting interest and all that. And I think that, you know, all comedy, even if it's very broad, should have an element of truth to it. To take one example, John Lithgow in Third Rock from the Sun,
mm-hmm,
makes me scream. It's so funny. And it's because he completely believes it. And as broad as the character is, there's no question in my mind that he thinks that he's really from space. And he is from space. He thinks he really is. And I think that's true. I think this
well,
is
you, wait, wait, Lithgow's actually from space?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yes.
You know, you learn weird stuff. I had
yeah.
No idea it was gonna...
yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Michael McKean and Ned O'Toole. And good
much.
Luck with the show. You'll
thank
be at Feinstein's through June 4th.
Yes.
That's
here in New York City at the Regency.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
43 past the hour, we will continue talking about the top news that we were talking about before.
We were?
Yes.
Okay.
But I want to talk about the surveillance story. I want to talk about everybody being on camera here in New York City if the police commissioner gets his way.
That's right.
Here on Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Air America is a morning sedition program. Look, you know, if you want to see us in person, we'll be broadcasting live this Friday from City Bakery in New York City, right here on 18th Street between 5th and 6th Avenues from 6 to 9. We're going to have give away some stuff. We've got Mike Doty going to be there. He's going to be playing some songs.
Excellent.
Yes. We've got Paula Froelich. Is that how you pronounce
it? Froelich, yes.
She's a gossip columnist here in New York for the New York Post. She'll maybe dish some dirt for us on New York, maybe on Bloomberg. How would that be? That'd make it political.
Is there dirt on him?
Sure, there's got to be dirt on everybody.
Yeah, right.
Have some coffee, some pastries. It'll be fun. If you want a podcast, Morning Sedition, you can do that at morningsedition.com if you want to check that out for details. So let's talk about this, Riley. If you live here in New York, even if you don't live in New York, apparently New York City Police Commissioner Ray Kelly has told top police people that he wants to put up to 400 surveillance cameras on high crime and high traffic streets. Now, this was reported in the New York Post.
Yes.
Now, Giuliani did this in Washington Square Park, didn't they?
He did it in Washington Square Park, and actually, this proposal is not new. Giuliani, or during the Giuliani years, I guess I should say,
uh-huh,
there was a similar proposal to put cameras up on high traffic streets like 34th Street, 42nd Street, Times Square, Herald Square, these different areas where there are a lot of people. Now, according to the New York Post, this scheme would not involve constant monitoring. In fact, it wouldn't involve monitoring at all. They would just be running these tapes, and then if something happened, they'd be able to go back and look at them.
So that's the deal. They just put the camera up that are running constantly, and if a crime happens on that street, then they'll be able to identify the people that were involved if they're on the tape.
Yeah.
So this is. I wonder if this functions as a deterrent.
I don't don't know if it functions so much as a deterrent, particularly if people know, end up knowing where the surveillance is being conducted. It is going to be a heck of a windfall for whatever companies are providing the hardware for this.
Did you read that piece in the Sunday Times about the business of the security business?
Oh, yeah.
How much stuff is being sold, these trade shows about how, you know, just completely fueled by fear and people's desire for security, let alone terrorist stuff. Well, Jared, one of our regular listeners who's not, you know, tangibly crazy that I can see, who lives in Chicago.
Not yet.
Not yet? Yeah, you're not quite over the edge like Brian is up in Washington.
No. How many more phone calls do I have to make a week?
I don't know, man. Yeah. So what? You're in Chicago, and you say they got cameras up there?
Yeah, they got one near the L, which is like the subway, the elevated train, and it's got a big blue flashing light on it. You can't miss it. And we had a big gooning problem in my neighborhood a while ago, and crime actually has gone down here. I guess my only concern is they're going to start cross-referencing, they're going to take that facial recognition software and they're going to cross-reference it with, you know, what you bought at the supermarket last night. They're going to say, you know, you bought the regular ice cream. You should really consider the light stuff. Your fat ass is getting larger by the day.
Wow.
Something like that.
Chicago supposedly has more than 2,000 cameras.
There's a lot of them.
They have something called a Homeland Security Grid. Now, the Department of Homeland Security helped finance the Chicago surveillance system with a $5 million grant.
Hey, Jared, so wait, let's get back to this ice cream issue. So you're saying that they're going to take...
You worry about yourself, Marin?
They're going to take a picture of you, put it against the facial identification, whatever, data bank, and then make decisions about whether you're fat or not. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm not saying that's what they're going to do, but from what I understand, they have software out there
wow.
that could recognize your face.
All right,
that
man.
Creeps me out.
It is a little creepy. Are you doing all right, Jared?
I'm doing great.
Okay, buddy. Thanks for calling.
Now, one of the issues, thanks for calling, Jared. One of the issues here is that, you know, they've done some studies that say that there's a risk of race discrimination with these kinds of surveillance cameras. Black males are disproportionately scrutinized where these systems are used. The National Association for the Criminal Rehabilitation of Offenders found race discriminations in the systems and said, quote, when certain sections of the community are disproportionately monitored, this not only acts to portray an impression of criminality amongst these groups, it also conveys a message to these individuals that they are not trusted.
Okay, I understand that, and that's a reasonable criticism. I also understand that on some level it's creepy to be on camera all the time. We're already on camera a great deal as individuals walking through the world.
Yes.
Now, and also understand that it's an intrusion on our privacy and our rights to some degree. But let's talk about what Jared was saying and the idea that these things may succeed in the sense that, let's say there is a murder on a street, any street. Let's say they got the whole damn city wired, Riley,
okay.
And there's a murder, and they got it on tape, and they were able to make a positive ID of the guy and solve the crime. Then why is the cameras bad?
Because murder may not be the only reason they're used.
Right, okay, so they might be used for drug dealing, they might be used for there's that guy again?
There's that guy. Remember that one of the guys that they arrested, the alleged aiders of Al-Qaeda, somebody like that, somebody who, and by the way, there have been several instances where there have been cases of mistaken identity in people that the government has surveilled and then detained.
Okay.
But let's say for the sake of argument, on the plus side, there's this guy, and maybe they apparently were following these two guys that they arrested for a little while, like a couple of years, doing surveillance and setting up a sting operation. I don't know that cameras would have gotten them busted any faster, by the way, in terms of what they're accused of having done. If you're talking about street crime, you can make a case because you could say, well, you know, if people, if there are cameras out here, it will be easier to apprehend a suspect. Maybe.
But it is creepy. It is like Big Brother-ish, and it is sort of an intrusion. And also, like, you know, a lot of people, it's an imposition on your freedom, because even if you're not doing anything, the knowledge that you're going to be on tape is kind of creepy, and that people are keeping tabs on you no matter what, and that you could be dragged into something else because you were in the vicinity. Why? It just seems to me that if you're under constant surveillance, that eventually you would feel completely unfree.
Well, on some level, people, you know, when they start talking about guarantees of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, being constantly on camera seems somehow to be at odds with that.
Right. Leah's calling from Florida, said that they had, Leah, what do you have to say about this?
Well, two things. One is my daughter lived in Baltimore for a while, and they had cameras there.
Yes, still do.
Yeah. And I live near Tampa, and Tampa tried that facial recognition software back in the Super Bowl.
Right. Yeah.
And it didn't work.
Right.
It just didn't work at all. And then they tried it in downtown where they have, like, the party areas.
Right.
And it didn't work there either.
Well, what were they trying to do with facial recognition software? In what, in where would that be? The Ybor District? Is that in Tampa?
Yeah, Ybor, yeah.
Ybor, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They were trying to see if it worked, I think is what they did, because they got it for free from the company.
All right, so they were just testing it out.
They were testing it out, and they didn't find anybody, and people wore sunglasses and hats and God knows what all, trying to keep from, you know.
Well, at least the state didn't pay for the technology and have it crap out on them, you know.
Right.
Well, thanks for your call.
I agree with you. It's Big Brother. That's what it is.
Well, yeah, I would think that the repercussions of it culturally on a psychological basis would be that people would start to... I think that to be under that much surveillance would make you put you in a chronic state of despair and second guessing yourself.
Well, I mean, the central question I think for a lot of people is, do you trust the government to use this kind of surveillance in a non-invasive way for law-abiding citizens? And I'm not sure you can.
Yeah, I don't. It doesn't seem to me that I'm not sure that you can. It just seems to me that if how is it not going to be misused? I mean, do you see how credit information is misused, how, you know, social security numbers are misused? What if they start, like Jared said, what if they start, you know, keeping tabs on you to see what your habits are to, you know, profile you for something else? That's the creepy thing.
Yeah, or if they get the wrong person, which happens a lot. Some of these people that we were talking about earlier, they've been renditioned, Mark, were held, and then it turned out they were the wrong people.
Let's talk about those two guys that were arrested, one in New York and one in Florida, on the suspicion of being terrorists, in just a few minutes when we continue this conversation here on Air America Radio.
Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour. It's Morning's Edition here on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hiya.
Hey, if you're in the New York City area, you want to come see us in person, we'll be broadcasting live this Friday from City Bakery right here in New York City on 18th Street between 5th and 6th Avenues from 6 to 9 a.m. Mike Doty will be there. He's going to sing some songs. We're going to have a few of his CDs to give away. We'll have coffee. We'll have keychains, maybe a T-shirt or two, perhaps a mug, maybe. But, you know, and you can come right up and touch me or Mark Riley.
Don't touch me.
No, come on. Just in a nice, like, hi, how are you? Like,
no,
maybe
we can shake hands, but don't touch me.
Well, that's touching, Riley. Shaking hands is touching.
No,
hello?
No. I don't want somebody to come up and, you know, grab my elbow or...
Did I just say hello? Did I just do that? Hello?
Yes. Hello?
Oh, that's bad, man.
Yes.
That's bad. Something's gone wrong with me. Here, I started exercising again. What's gone wrong with me, Riley?
I don't know. It's Tuesday.
What am I doing? It's Tuesday, right. 3-day weekend. Had a good time.
Yeah.
What did you do? You didn't even tell us what you did earlier.
I just relaxed. I slept a lot. I listened to Dan Pashman and Brendan McDonald yesterday morning.
For how long?
About 5 minutes. No.
Well, let's wait. I want to take this caller here in just a second because we brought up I brought up my dislike of American Idol, and I also said that I didn't watch it, and I don't want to talk about it really, but I apparently offended someone in New Jersey. So I want to take her call and try to address her needs. Anita, good morning. What's on your mind?
Hi, Anita.
How are you?
I'm good.
What happened? What's the matter?
First, I want to say I feel a little bit like the margarine caller, you know, talking about something like American Idol when there's a lot of really bad stuff going on. But,
that's okay. It's okay to have a moment of levity during badness.
Yes.
Well, I just want to say that, you know, some of the kids that make it to the end are extremely talented, and I don't watch any other reality shows. I really don't like Survivor.
It's a talent contest, yeah.
all that kind of stuff I just think is pointless because they're not talented people. But, you know, I moved to New York in 86 to become an actress and decided to not continue pursuing it because, one, it's, like, so painfully difficult.
Yes.
And I think if you have something where you can give an opportunity to kids, I mean, I really think that some of the winners are more talented than a lot of the, you know,
Okay.
Spears and, you know, NSYNC and those kind of kids.
Who are bad as well.
Really
they're bad as
yeah.
well.
Yeah, nobody said they had any talent.
But I'm telling you, one of the guys that was the finalist this year, I will go buy his album. I'm telling you when it comes out.
Let me just say.
Beautiful voice.
Anita, who was it? What was his name?
Bo Bice.
Okay, let me just tell you something. That's fine. I understand you enjoy it, and I understand that, you know, you let go of your dream in order to, you know, do whatever you're doing now.
Oh, don't give me psycho babble, Mark. Listen,
you just said that. I'm telling you that the one thing that I want to say about American Idol is, fine, they may be talented, but they're being encouraged to mock other people, to do mediocre music, to not do anything original, and they're being rewarded for that.
I feel bad that their, you know, top albums have, like, a lot of pop crap on it. I feel bad about that. But I'm just saying that, you know, you keep saying, you keep comparing them to, you know, The Bachelor and...
I didn't compare. What show are you listening to? I've never even mentioned The Bachelor ever.
I've been talking about this for weeks now. Come on.
What are you talking about? Have I been talking about this for weeks?
I don't know. Have you? No, he hasn't been talking about this for weeks.
And I'm not talking psychobabble. And I don't want you to take your bitterness out on me either.
No bitterness. I'm a very contented person now, so I have no bitterness.
I think American Idol stinks because what it does is it inspires young people who you claim are talented to do mediocre music and be rewarded for mediocrity. The last thing we need in this world is more unoriginal pablum style music. I mean, if somebody did anything original on that show, they'd be voted off for being weird.
No, I disagree. I mean, I mean, first of all, if you don't watch it, I'm really having a hard time finding out how you can have such a...
I watched it once.
It.
How many times do I got to watch it to be able to be? Just because I don't get sucked into it and, you know, determine my emotional well-being for the week on it doesn't mean that I don't understand it.
I haven't watched it. I've listened to it because my daughter watches it all the time, but I can't watch it.
Mark,
that was a great laugh. What a great laugh.
I'm on 17 years of therapy.
There you go. The truth finally comes out. And you criticize me for doing psych. I love you. Take care of yourself.
You'll be well.
Bye.
Take care, Anita.
What a great laugh that was. I got her. Did you hear that? I got her. So now what? Do we have an important phone call? I don't even see a name there right now. So apparently it's not important. Did I tell you? I know we should be covering important stuff. What were we going to talk about? Oh, those two guys arrested. Well, can I just say one thing before we get into the news?
Sure.
I saw Cinderella Man in a sneak preview in Astoria.
Oh, cool.
I went to go see it because I rode my bike. Thank you. Thank you very much. I rode my bike over to get the tickets. I saw the film. I'll tell you what it, you know what it is? It's exactly like Seabiscuit, only Russell Crowe plays the horse and the jockey.
Nice.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
Yeah. The movie, it got applause in Astoria.
Wow.
So I don't know what that's going to tell you. I'm not going to. It's hard to ruin the movie. I think everybody knows what the movie's about. You know, I got to be honest with you. Not unlike many Ron Howard films, it gets a little predictable. Russell Crowe was fine. He got a sort of a Jersey accent, all right. I like Renee Zellweger a lot, just because seen many actresses willing to be as vulnerable and peculiar as she is emotionally.
I got a question
screen.
For you, though, Mark.
Yes. Max Baer, the guy who played Max Baer was kind of...
He was good?
Well, he's a big clown, you know, and he was kind of...
All the noble boxers are the white guys? Can you tell me that?
I'm not even sure what that means.
Look at how they portray black boxers in these films. You ever seen it? I mean, look at Rocky. Where is the nobility, other than Carl Weathers, and he got killed in one of those Rocky movies. Where's the nobility of a... Where's the black boxer? Where's the brother who got up and changed the world? Except for maybe Ali.
Ali, sure. There was no black boxers in this film.
Tyson?
Tyson changed the world, though, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
But what about Joe Louis?
About him? Where's the Joe Louis movie?
Where is the Joe Louis movie? He was in a few movies early on in his career. But apparently this guy, Braddock.
Braddock.
The guy who's a Cinderella Man is about later in his career, fought and lost to Joe Louis. But Joe Louis, you know, throughout his entire career, called him the most courageous fighter he ever knew.
Wow. Yeah?
Yeah, how do you like that?
Well, that's the reason to make a movie about
it. Well, I do. Look, the movie is what it is. It's a depression movie.
I know.
It does say some things about class structure in this country that, you know, I think are ongoing and now even more than ever. There is a couple of moments in the movie that are really powerful, but all in all, I didn't think it was that terrific.
Yeah, really?
You could pretty much guess what it's going to be about. What?
How are the fighting scenes?
The fighting scenes were okay, but again, I've seen better fighting scenes.
Oh, really?
Like
Clint Eastwood did better in Million Dollar Baby?
Oh, that was good, but, you know, Raging Bull had the best fighting scenes.
Oh, Raging Bull is just...
The fighting scenes in this were pretty good, and Russell Crowe was pretty good. Like I said, the story is an elevating story. You know exactly what's going to happen and where it's going to go, and I think I cried, like, maybe twice.
Really?
And
you
in
cried?
The movie,
you cried?
That doesn't take much.
Hold it. Alert the media. Who's doing the bottom of the hour news here?
Oh, I mean, what, were you kidding?
No, Riley, come on.
I'll cry at a
couple. No, man, he cries at movies? I never knew that.
What are you talking about?
He cries at a Sunday Times.
I mean, I get moved.
You've been with him when he's been reading the Sunday Times?
I get moved by news stories quite a bit. I cry. Yes. Okay. I'm not ashamed. I can't cry for the right reason, but I think I just squirted out a couple of tears, maybe just even little ones, but not, you know, I got sort of anxious with this movie. I wanted to get on with it already. You know, like when he was doing the big final fight where he's like, you're fighting for all of us, that whole thing, and we get the big buildup. That honestly, the historical truth of the situation with the fight with Max Baer mm-hmm. is it's not quite as satisfying as you want it to be. I'm not going to piss anybody off. All right, so we'll come back. We're going to talk about those two guys arrested for terrorism. We'll talk a little bit about this gold medal mom. And also, apparently, Viagra...
Gold star mom.
Gold star mom. Gold medal's a flower that I used to make a cake last week. Yes. And Dick Cheney. We'll throw a little of that in. All right,
yeah.
So that's all going to happen next on Air America Radio.
Hi, this is former Labor Secretary Robert Reich. Remember me? I helped preside over the greatest economic expansion in our nation's history, creating over 20 million new jobs during including years. I'm sorry to hear that the Bush administration has either outsourced or eliminated your job entirely. But while you're waiting for things to turn around, stay tuned to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Give me back my job again.
Past the hour, 20 past the hour. Mark Mariner with Mark Riley on Morning Sedition.
Yeah.
Air America Radio. That's Mike Doty, who will be with us live this Friday at City Bakery, 18th Street between 5th and 6th Avenue, 6 to 9 a.m. If you want to come down, see Mike, have some coffee, some pastries, maybe get a free keychain, touch Mark Riley on the head.
Oh, no, you don't.
Yes, they will. All right. So, Mike, Matt Taibbi. Is going to be with us in the studio shortly. He's a journalist. He writes for the New York Press. He's got a book coming out.
Yeah.
Very funny guy. But right now, since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So now, on the phone once again, is Planet Bush Bureau Chief Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Hey, good morning, Mark. God's on our team. You might as well go home.
Oh, so
you're
Lawton,
done. We got
all right. All right,
it's
right out of the gate, I got to take a hit. So, Lawton, yesterday was Memorial Day.
Yeah.
When we remember Americans who died in all those terrible wars over the years.
Let's get terrible?
Yeah.
I think you mean fantastic wars.
Whoa.
Thrilling wars, or even, pardon my French, kick-ass wars.
How can you say that?
Kick-ass.
Lawton, wars are grisly, heartbreaking, disgusting events.
Oh, pardonnez-moi, Monsieur Lily Liver. I forgot. Your heart's constantly bleeding. Wake up. You've got to have war, Mark. Got to. It's like fluoride in the drinking water. Umbrella in the daiquiri, okay? Essential.
Hey, I got a question for you,
Lawton. Have war.
What are you talking about?
All right. Look at all the blessings that come from war. It weeds out the weak and the infidels.
No.
Keeps us focused. Great for the economy. Gives us a chance to try out all those new weapons. Hey, we paid for them. Let's
come
use
on,
them.
Man.
Keeps us occupied until the rapture comes.
Whoa.
War is like George W. Two-Terms Mandate Bush down there in Crawford. Clearing brush. Okay? Making everything clean.
Dude, war serves no function. None. Okay,
what about war movies?
Oh.
Those have to be based on something.
That's
your precious Hollywood would collapse without war movies.
Oh,
what about video games? Those are turning out to be a real nice training tool for the soldiers, even better than football or date rape.
What?
You know, it's
Whoa. You justify war because of video games?
No,
what?
Of course not, Mark. Here's my point.
Oh,
every bad thing happened when this country wasn't in a war.
Uh-huh.
Look at Jimmy Carter.
Okay.
No war. Disco.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Yeah, interesting.
Ronald Reagan was afraid we'd go that one, so he threw us a nice little feel-good war in Grenada, picked us right up. He was so right. And in the 90s, under, you know who?
Yes.
No war, oral sex. Okay, case closed.
Well, now look, what?
We had a war.
Look,
wouldn't have had any of that.
Yeah, yeah. Did you ever fight in a war, Lawton Smalls? Did you?
I'm fighting in one right now.
How are you?
War against you, tinfoil hat liberal.
Oh, shut it.
Yes, sir. I'm a veteran of the war against Tom DeLay.
Oh,
I'm an army of one. Full Metal Lawton.
Oh, right buddy. Okay, all right. So you ever been in combat, seen any action there, big guy?
Well, no, Mark.
Uh-huh.
That's crazy. Why should I deny all those fine Hispanic and black fellas their chance to become heroes?
Oh, my God.
I just be in their way. That's hate speech.
Now, look, Cheney and those other chicken hawk neocons have never seen combat either, my friend. Bush can stand up there at Arlington Cemetery and make his speeches about patriotism, but he has no idea what real sacrifice means or what real suffering means. He's a coward and a hypocrite, and we're going to be paying for his bogus wars for a generation, my friend. Go ahead and cry, you little baby. Yeah, yeah.
You cried movies.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Lord.
When the kids in my neighborhood would play war, I'd have to stay inside and practice in jello.
One
time, my mom let me go out to play war. The other kids made me a hostage.
Oh, no.
They blindfolded me and made me drink Pepsi through a straw up my nose. It burned up.
Oh, my God. Take it easy. Pull it together, will you? All right.
Wow.
All right, cello time is over.
How much did you cry?
I just a little. I just cried a little.
I want to see it because sometimes I
don't. You're going to make me cry in a second if you don't pull it together. Come on. Oh, boy. Okay. He sounds like he has that lung thing.
War keeps you physically fit.
Oh,
you know, it's great for the eye, your abs, and your quads.
All right, Lawton. Goodbye, Lawton.
I'm going to that movie.
You better go alone because you're going to disrupt everybody with your bawling.
All right, buddy. God loves you anyway.
All right.
Deal with it.
God loves me anyway. Anyway, thank you. Goodbye, Lawton. God loves me anyway.
Anyway.
So Matt Taibbi is going to be out here in a second. I read some of his columns, some of his books. He's a funny guy.
He's a seditionist. That's what he is.
Yeah, he's a satirist as well. But let's bring up this Cheney thing. Dick Cheney is a baffling. He's not baffling. He's a shameless liar. Let me just quote him. This is the same guy that said, "quote My belief is we will in fact be greeted as liberators." Unquote. This is Dick Cheney on Meet the Press in 2003,
mm-hmm.
March. All right. Yesterday on Larry King, quote, "I think they're in the last throes, if you will, of the insurgency." End quote. Shameless lying. If we are going to take the evidence from anybody we've talked to, any journalist that's ever spent time on the ground, any military personnel, anybody that we've ever talked to with any credentials about Iraq has said that this is not something I want to happen, but I don't want the vice president to lie. But it seems to me that they're getting bolder, they're getting stronger, they're getting more organized. The country is on the verge of civil war. We're outgunned in some ways because the troops are overextended. And it's never going to stop. And he says that they're in their last throes. And what is that? Is America going to believe that?
Well, some Americans will believe that because they'll believe anything that the Bush administration tells them. And, you know, a lot of people think Dick Cheney tells Bush what to say anyway. But the fact is they've been putting a happy face. The administration has been putting a happy face on this shameful Iraq war for far too long, Mark. And now they're saying that there are going to be troops there, people who are maybe in high school now, are going to be serving in Iraq before Bush leaves office. Think about it.
I just don't know where the hell he gets off. I mean, insurgents have killed more than 700 Iraqis and 70 U.S. troops since a Shiite-led cabinet was announced on April 28th. That makes May the bloodiest month since the pre-election insurgency in January. I mean, four guys just got killed over the weekend, American guys.
Yeah.
You know, hundreds of, you know, countless thousands of Iraqis. I don't understand where he can just shamelessly lie and condescend to the public. He's just playing to the base of, you know, you know, Christo-fascist zombies and, you know, conservative zombies who believe, who don't want to hear the truth about anything.
Well, he's playing to his audience. He is playing to people who believe my country, right or wrong. He's playing to the same people who said we can't change leaders in the middle of a war. He's playing to a group of people who are predisposed to believe him anyway.
Yeah, but okay, that's stupid. That does not justify the stupid. I mean, it's just like, how can he just, you know what? He's a liar. That's all.
That would do it.
Okay, Matt Taibbi is going to tell us about what it was like to be on the Bush campaign. He'll tell us some behind the scenes goodies.
Behind the scenes truth, too.
Yeah.
Next on Air America Radio.
Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey!
It's America's Morning Sedition program. Good morning to everybody. I hope you had a good weekend. Right now in the studio, we're pleased to have with us Matt Taibbi. He's a columnist for the New York Press and a contributing editor to Rolling Stone magazine. His new book is Spanking the Donkey, Dispatches from the Dumb Season. Now, you know, before the break, Matt, good morning, by the way.
Good morning.
We're talking about Dick Cheney. You spent some time. Did you infiltrate the Republican campaign? Were you on the campaign? What was the story on that?
Yeah, I was an operative for George Bush in Orlando, Florida. In fact, I managed one of the offices there, and I'm very proud to say that we did very well in that section of the country. If you remember, actually, Bush did extremely well in the I-4 corridor. So, which was considered a prime battleground, and I think I like to think that had a lot to do with that.
But were you an assassin, so to speak? Were you working undercover? Were you doing? Were you pretending? Is that what happened?
Right. I was assigned there to go to work on the campaign by Rolling Stone, and I went down and I was there for almost 2 months.
And they didn't catch you?
They didn't catch me. I had a couple of close shaves, but for the most part, I was a very diligent employee for Bush and did a good job.
Isn't it strange being surrounded by conservatives and Republicans?
Well, yeah, except that in most of America, you're going to be anyway most of the time. So.
I know it's almost like we were talking about this last week a little bit. I was in Cincinnati, but I mean, obviously, you were undercover to some degree. But what frightens me is that when you feel surrounded, is how much people self-censor. Like,
right.
They're like, I don't want to, you know, why draw attention to the truth or my point of view?
Right, exactly. But, you know, you get the urge to be a little bit mischievous every now and then.
Like what?
Started to drip out. Well, I remember I was in this one office, and there was a guy who was the manager before I was promoted to manage the office. He would always watch only Fox News,
mm-hmm.
And every time he got up to go to the bathroom, I would go and change it to BET, and then go back down to my seat and just sit there and wait to see how long it took him to notice, you know. He'd angrily turn it back, you know.
Look around, who did that?
Now, Matt, what was your cover? I mean, obviously, you didn't go down there and say, hey, I'm working for Rolling Stone. Well, how did you manage to, you had to infiltrate. How'd you do it?
Yeah, I had a really idiotic story. I said I was a New York City school teacher, that I was down in Orlando because I'd followed some girl down there for the summer, and that I was going to, you know, spend a couple of months where I didn't have anything to do. And I just said, I have a lot of free time and I'd like to work for the president who I love so much. And
wow.
they actually bought that. But yeah.
I'm surprised with the New York City angle. I mean, that's
right. Well, you know, I just spent a lot of time telling them how completely debauched and depraved New York City was, and everybody just loved those stories so much that, I would tell them that in the school that I worked at, that kids would just snort cocaine right off your Bible, right in front of you, we had cross-dressers roaming the halls and teaching the preschoolers and all that stuff, and people were just like, I can't believe they let that stuff go on.
We always snort drugs off the Bible for an hotel room, and it's
right.
Not another surface to use.
Right.
Wow.
So you write about that. You write about drug use a bit, huh?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you a proud drug user? Is that the deal?
No, I'm an ashamed drug user.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, a few years ago I might have been a proud drug user. Now it's just, I'm 35 years old. It's just pathetic.
It does get pathetic, right? I definitely know what you're talking about. You can always stop.
Right, you can, yeah, theoretically.
Yeah, make a couple phone calls. Do you need an intervention? Do you need to reach out? You're going to be all right?
Maybe in a few months I'll need an intervention. I want to finish what I have.
Well, let me tell you something. If it's going to take you a few months to finish it, you definitely don't have a problem unless you're sitting on a kilo or something.
Now, wait a minute. Before we go any further, this story I cannot believe you actually pulled off. You managed to convince some of Mikhail Gorbachev's handlers that he was going to become an assistant coach for the New York Jets?
Yeah.
How did you do that?
Well, Gorbachev at the time was a little bit down in the dumps. He had just run for president in 1996.
You were in Moscow.
I was in Moscow.
You were living in Moscow.
I was living in Moscow. I was the editor of an English language newspaper there. Okay. It was a little bit like Spy Magazine. We did a lot of practical jokes. And we knew Gorbachev had a lot of time on his hands and didn't have a lot of money. So what we did is I printed up business cards and went to his offices and talked to one of his aides and said, you know, he did such a great job with rebuilding with perestroika, which is what perestroika means, is restructuring, that, you know, we've got this football team here in New York that's just going through a rebuilding period. And we just thought, you know, you're exactly the guy to kind of turn things around. And we offered him a ton of money and they took a week to think about it, and then next thing we know, we got this letter to our office that said, you know, the president's willing to fly to New York to sign the deal right away. And, you know, so we published all that stuff, and then, of course, we disappeared after that.
I was about, either you disappeared or you were disappeared. I was about to say, you know, they take that kind of stuff seriously over there in the former Soviet, don't they?
So yeah, well, Gorbachev, he was a nobody by then, so it didn't
happen. Has been.
Right.
Washed up.
Right.
So what, but that, we just sort of skirted over the idea that, like, you know, all right, well, what the hell were you doing in Russia? I mean, you're just sort of like, you know, yeah. Oh, yeah, I was doing a spy-like magazine in Moscow. What was that about?
Yeah, I was there. I was in Russia for almost 10 years.
What drove you to Russia? I mean, what made you decide to do that? Was it journalistic intention? What inspired you to go there?
You know, I was a real nerd in college, and I went to Russia, and it was a nation full of failures, you know, and I felt really at home, you know, and I just stayed right out of college. I didn't come back till a couple of years ago. So
you were on the Kerry plane as well?
Yeah, I was there for about 2 months on the Kerry plane.
And how did you feel initially, like right when you got on the plane? Were you part of the momentum? Were you excited? I've read some of your columns, and you tend to, you know, you sort of you take shots at everybody.
Yeah, well, the Kerry, I mean, one thing that a lot of people don't realize about what campaign journalism is all about is that it's very much like high school. In fact, it's almost like a turbocharged version of Heathers or something like that. You know, you get on that plane, and it's so much like the first day of school. And when I first got on, you know, I was essentially consigned to the back of the plane with the techies right away. You really start out socially at the bottom of the totem pole, and then you have to work your way up. And it's a really strange environment, especially if you don't behave the way they want you to behave.
Which is just nice pieces about Kerry at all times.
Right. Well, one of the big taboos is don't ask another journalist a question on the record about what he's doing. You know, I made that mistake early on. There was a situation, remember when the Kerry mistress story came out?
Yeah.
Drudge put out that thing,
right.
and all these reporters just they secondarily reported it the next day, and I just went around with my pen and pad and said, hey, could you tell me, you know, for the record, why it is that you bothered to put that in your story? Next thing you know, I had literally been reassigned to the very last
on the wing.
Right next to the bathroom. Right?
Yeah, exactly. You're in cargo.
Right, yeah.
Our guest is Matt Taibbi, columnist for the New York Press, contributing editor to Rolling Stone. His book is Spanking the Donkey, Dispatches from the Dumb Season.
So now, when you were on the road with Kerry and just in covering this last election, what were some things that just blew your mind? I mean, where you were like, oh, my God, this is ridiculous or this is stupid, outside of all of it. I mean, what were some outstanding things that resonate in your head that you'll never forget that completely made you lose all faith in politics?
Well, I mean, God, there's so many different things. I mean, yeah. I remember that, you know, Kerry had this thing every single day where he would get onto the tarmac in the airport and he would have an aide pull out a football.
Yeah.
And they would toss this football around. And, you know, literally everybody on this plane had seen this, you know, twice a day for 6 or 7 months, and they would still run and flock to the football scene because they had to get that football shot every single day.
Right.
And I would ask people, why do you have to put this on every single day? I mean, if you've already did it yesterday, why do you have to do it again today? And like, well, that's what they need. They need something that's a picture that they can show. I mean, if it's a position paper, if it's an issue, they can't put it on the air. They can't talk about it. But if it's a clown throwing a football, that's journalism and journalism. So
what happened there? Go ahead, Riley.
Well, what I'm wondering is you saw both sides of this. You saw the Bush people. You saw the Kerry people. Did you know ahead of time who you thought was going to win? I mean, just from your experience being in both camps?
I was sure Bush was going to win. I bet.
Really?
In fact, I made a lot of money on the campaign by betting people that Bush was going to
win. Why? Was he better organized? Did you just have a sense they had momentum? Did Kerry have a big L on his forehead? What was it?
I remember when Dean was still the front runner the summer before, and he was flying around the country, and Dean, and this was, you know, a year and a half before the election, he was drawing crowds of, you know, 10,000, 15,000 people. Kerry, he's the nominee already, is going to big cities and drawing 300, 400 people. I mean, people just did not want to turn out for this guy. You know, he just didn't have, he didn't generate any natural enthusiasm, and he was a pathetic candidate on, you know, to look at up close. Whereas Bush, you know, people that I worked with in the Bush campaign were genuinely enthusiastic about him, and they really loved him. So that was something that was completely absent from the Kerry campaign.
Now, your criticism of journalism is noted in the sense that I hear you criticizing journalism, but what you're doing is something that borders on satire in a lot of ways.
Right.
I mean, like you're not essentially a journalist, but you're basically, there's a gonzo element to it, but it's pretty hardcore satire primarily, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I have done some investigative journalism in the past, but I didn't really do that much of it with the campaign.
So now, but I read a piece about the press corps. I mean, as somebody who's obviously critical of it, I mean, you know, what do you think needs to change with journalism? I mean, what would you like to see happen?
Well, I think there are so many different things about the way the current press corps is structured that it would be really impossible to untangle them all and make too many concrete suggestions. But one of the things is that this 24-hour news cycle that we have with cable, mm-hmm. where you have to have updates every half an hour, is really killing campaign journalism because the whole momentum around campaign journalism is centered around these little tiny incidents and running stories like the Mister story or completely meaningless give and take about whether or not Kerry did this with the Swift boats or that.
Right.
And these artificial controversies that are generated. And because they have to fill these time slots every half an hour or so, they get become completely dependent upon these artificial plot lines. And as a result, we never talk about any issues or what, you know,
mm-hmm.
campaigns are actually about.
Did the Jeff Gannon thing surprise you at all when you heard about it?
I think it's great, isn't it? I mean, it's like you know, Nero's Rome brought back to life. You know, I mean, next thing you know, we're going to have horses in the press corps. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous, right? That's amazing,
Mr. President.
Hey, at least the guy's computer savvy.
That would be a good bit. So, okay, so now the book is a collection of your pieces for both the New York Press, Rolling Stone.
Nation.
And the Nation. Yeah. Thanks for being with us. Good luck with the book, Matt Taibbi. It was great talking to you.
Thanks a lot. Nice meeting you.
And we'll continue our conversation. We've got things we need to talk about, Riley. There's quite a few things that we haven't quite covered, isn't there?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, and maybe we can play Brian from Everett again, and also apparently Viagra.
Makes you
blind.
Ooh.
All right, that's next. Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition on the air. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
All right, it's time to to land this this show, as I like to say.
Oh, yeah.
It's 51 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. It's Morning Tradition on Air America Radio. If you're in the New York area, come see us at New York, where? At City Bakery here in New York City on 18th Street between 5th and 6th. That's this Friday between 6 and 9. We got Mike Doty. He's going to play throughout the morning. We're going to give away some of his CDs. We got keychains and maybe mugs and coffee and pastries. Also, I just want to tell you, if you're taking a lot of Viagra, slow it down, man. Slow it down. I can't see. Yeah, well, apparently there's been like 38 reports of a type of blindness in Viagra users, so they're trying to make the connection now. I guess there, you know, there can be too much of
the
a good thing.
The church made that connection a long time ago. You know?
Yeah, but that's different.
Is it?
Sure it is.
It's God getting even. It's all the same.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But I guess if you, I mean, maybe it's worth it to some of these people.
Right? I don't know. You know, there was a big, there's been a big scandal about different criminals getting a hold of Viagra for free or something too. It's very bizarre.
That's
I think
a little vague, Riley. What does that mean?
No, no. Apparently there's some ex-cons who were getting paid through Medicare or some kind of medical program, and they were getting Viagra. They were
picked out on
the
street.
No, to use.
So you're saying that they were arrested for Viagra use?
For getting Viagra illegally.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, look.
Black market.
You know, we've got a phone answering machine that you can call if you'd like to leave a message. And, you know, we get a lot of different messages, but we get a lot of messages from Brian in Washington. Now, Brian's been a regular listener for a long time, and last week I said this about Brian. This is a guy named Brian up there in Everett, Washington, who's a frequent caller to the show, but sometimes a little over the top. You know, he spends a lot of time awake. We're assuming that he has an inconsistent mental disposition, but a good guy. And he
inconsistent mental
disposition. I'm being diplomatic, man.
Okay.
So now we come into work. I'm back. This is me in the present. And there's no fewer than, what, like 30 messages from Brian? Now, we'll just play the spectrum. Let's hear the first one there, Chris.
I got an inconsistent mental disposition. But how's that gonna look in the deposition? I got all messed up by a crooked family physician.
Interesting.
Now to clear my name.
See, now, we've got this problem with our machine is it cuts off randomly, and it's not long enough for Brian to get his song out based on the description I made of him. But he tries, Chris.
Now, I may have some strange religious views, because I believe Al Franken is the king of the Jews. And Jesus may have... Hey, this phone system is screwing me up by hanging me up before I get a chance to punch it in. Listen to my song. Now I may have some strange religious views, 'cause I believe Al Franken is the king of the Jews. Al Franken, nothing to lose, makes you laugh at the troubling. You know, whoever f***ing with this phone system can f*** themselves in the mouth and eat their own waste. You know, that's what I say. So leave me alone. I'm trying to get a good take and replay it back on my touch-tone pad.
Oh, man.
So can I play and get a good recording so I can hear how it sounds? I got an inconsistent mental disposition.
No kidding.
I'm trying to form a song here.
Oh, no.
And I can't have the phone people or whoever's in charge of punching my buttons, you know, needs to get, you know, needs to get some cancer, you know, needs to find their own disease in their own mind, you know, and how happy they really are with their life and how content they are and how they're going to look to the sky when they die, you know, or are they going to be in hell? I got an inconsistent mental disposition. Now, how's that gonna look in the deposition?
We haven't heard from Brian today.
No, and I'm wondering why now.
I know. Usually he would have called by now from Washington. He's up all night. Hey, look, if you're feeling inspired, apparently that's a 646.
You're going to encourage people now, aren't you?
646-274-3678. Remember the woman that used to call and leave messages
all
the time?
Yeah, the woman from Oakland.
The unemployed insomniac or whatever, she finally went away.
Well, she got a job.
Well, no, she had some sort of weird daddy complex with Ed Schultz and kept saying, like, why can't Mark Maron be more like Ed Schultz? I like him. He's like my daddy.
Oh, my God.
Something like that. Hey, so, look, as I said, City Bakery on Friday. If you want to come down, it's on 18th Street between 5th and 6th. We'll be talking about all week. Mike Doty's going to be with us. That is the sound of the fax machine. Here's our weekly liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Write these down, folks. Here are your marching orders for today. One, a socialist is leading the Senate race in Vermont. Vacillate between supporting him and saying he can't win. End up being no help whatsoever to him or anyone else. Two, send your kids to liberal summer camp. Crafts, swimming, passive resistance. Three, lay a hemp wreath at the tomb of the unknown soldier. The unknown stoner. No. Lay a hemp wreath at the tomb of the unknown stoner. Aww. Four, go around the bookstores putting stickers on copies of the Koran saying the Bush administration says please dispose of this book properly. And five, distribute large amounts of heroin labeled product of Afghanistan, courtesy of U.S. foreign policy.
Ooh.
Nothing. Not. Today's phrase, just drop this in the conversation. Bush visiting Arlington Cemetery is like O.J. going back to Brentwood. Wake up, sheeple, and hear the war dead spinning in their graves. How do you like that?
Hey.
All right, look, tomorrow, Senator Russ Feingold is going to come back. Apparently had a good time.
Yeah. And talk to him again? That'd be great.
Peter Berman. Professor Peter Berman is going to tell us why Bush policies encourage anal sex. How's that for a tease?
They do?
Curious?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I got an inconsistent mental disposition myself.
Both, man.
It's been fun, though.
It has, Riley.
Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.